This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. It's Zoomer Radio's Theater of the Mind with Frank Proctor. Open your mind as we fill your head with amazing thrills, chills, and laughs. Theater of the Mind, the best love programs from radio's golden age, only on Zoomer Radio. Now, here is your master storyteller, Frank Proctor.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the show. Here we are on the 4th of July, and our friends south of the border are celebrating their most important day. And I think it's kind of fitting that tonight's first show centers around one of the most celebrated players of their national pastime, Babe Ruth. We'll hear his exciting story in just a few minutes featuring William Bendix. But first, a few stats from his career. Babe Ruth was a 7-time World Series champion. He was voted Athlete of the Century by the Associated Press and named the greatest baseball player of the 20th century by Sports Illustrated. His career in Major League Baseball spanned 22 seasons from 1914 through 1935. Had a couple of nicknames, too, the Bambino and the Sultan of SWAT. He began his Major League Baseball career as a stellar left-handed pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, but achieved his greatest fame as a slugging outfielder for the New York Yankees. I think you'll enjoy how he's portrayed tonight by William Bendix. And to our friends in the United States, happy 4th of July, and I hope you enjoy the Babe Ruth story.
From Hollywood, William Bendix, Charles Bickford, and Loreen Tuttle in the current baseball classic, The Babe Ruth Story. Yes, from Hollywood, the Screen Guild Players, brought to you each Thursday night by Camel Cigarettes. Thursday night, Screen Guild night, when Camel Cigarettes bring you your favorite stars in their greatest motion picture roles. Tonight, it's a story that's knocking them for a home run at the box office. Roy Del Ruth's Allied Artist production, the exciting story of Mr. Baseball himself. For the first time on the air, the Screen Guild Players present
The Babe Ruth Story, starring William Bendix and Charles Bickford, with Loreen Tuttle.
All right, boys, all right. Quiet now. There'll be no classes at St. Mary's School today.
Is it... Brother Matthias, is it the Babe?
Yes, my boy. It's the Babe. Yes, here at St. Mary's School in Baltimore, this is where it all began. A long, long time ago. 1913, Christmas. And the chapel bell was ringing that morning, too. I remember as I was sitting in my study... Now, who did that? Who threw that snowball through my window? Who? Oh, it's you, George.
Merry Christmas, Brother Matthias.
Merry Christmas.
I was trying to throw a curve, and it worked. You should have seen it, brother. It sailed off straight as a bullet, and then it broke like lightning. Right through the...
Sure. It sure did. Better give your arm a rest, George. Come in. I have a surprise for you.
Yes, sir.
Sit down, George.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, you'll be leaving us in the spring. You'll be going outside to make a life for yourself.
Yes, sir.
You've been with us a long time, George. Ever since you were 12. Ever since your mother died. I'll miss you.
Oh, same here, Brother Matthias. St. Mary's has been good to me, and so have you. I guess I've been a problem sometimes.
You're no problem, George. You're one of the best boys we've had. Any idea of what you'd like to do?
Well, I've learned a trade. How to be a tailor. I don't go for it much, though.
No, I didn't think so. You know, Jack Dunn watched our school team play several games last spring. Jack Dunn, he's the manager of the Baltimore Orioles.
The Orioles? Oh, that's a real baseball team.
How would you like to play with them?
Me? Gosh, I'd give my right arm.
Save it. You might need it this season. You see, Mr. Dunn saw you pitch 3 games, and he said to me, I think I'll sign that, Babe.
Babe? Babe who?
It seems you're getting a nickname and a job. He'll pay you $600 for the season. How's that?
You mean that I get paid to play baseball?
Aren't some people crazy?
$600? There ain't that much money in the world.
There isn't that much money, George.
That's what I said. There ain't that much money in the world.
Hey, guys. Hey. Did you pipe that rookie's nightshirt?
First guy I ever saw wearing a tent.
And did you see what he took to bed with him?
Yeah, 4 hot dogs and a bottle of pop.
I don't know about that guy's pitching, but when it comes to eating, he's going to have the fattest average in baseball.
Let's give him the once-over.
Huh? Yeah, come on.
Oh, hello, fellas. Just thought we'd kind of look in on you, Babe. Everything all right?
Oh, yeah, fellas, thanks. But what's that for, that hammock?
That? Oh, midgets sleep in them. Travel for half fare.
They do?
Ah, oh, don't kid the Babe, you guys. We got to help him. Show him the ropes. Babe, that hammock ain't for midgets. Mm-hmm. It's for your arm. You sleep with your pitching arm in it, Babe.
Oh, gee. The railroad thinks of everything, don't it?
Go on and try it, Babe. It's easy when you get the hang.
Yeah. Keeps your pitching arm limber. All night.
All right. Gee, it feels sort of uncomfortable.
Hey, you guys. What's the convention? What's going on?
Oh, hello, Mr. Dunn. The fellas here were just helping me out.
Come on. Break it up. You guys know we're playing an exhibition game tomorrow. Connie Mack's world champs. Now, you can't stay up all night and bat 300. Hit the hay now, all of you. Go on.
Okay. Good night. Good night, fellas. Good night. Say, Mr. Dunn, I was just wondering...
Hey, what are you doing with your arm?
Oh, I got it in this pitcher sling. It's kind of tough, but I can make it all right.
My, if I had a bat, I'd start swinging at those dopes. Look, Babe, you're going to pitch tomorrow. Now, if anybody tells you to stick your head into a furnace, don't do it.
No, sir.
Now, anything else wrong with you?
Yeah, I'm hungry.
How do you know? You didn't see it either.
Yellow!
An unknown rookie on the Baltimore Orioles today defeated the world champion Athletics by a score of 1-0, mowing down with ease such famous hitters as Home Run Baker, Eddie Collins, and Stuffy McInnes. Pitcher George Herman, alias Babe Ruth, made baseball history as he led his minor league.
Did you see the paper? Babe Ruth just won his 12th straight game. Pitch. Hit. Run. Gee, that Babe Ruth can do anything. Brother Matthias, he made it. Babe Ruth made it. He's going up to the big leagues, the Boston Red Sox.
Yes, that's how it always was. That boy was every youngster in America. The Babe was king to those kids. He could do no wrong. And no one ever challenged his place in their hearts, whether he was up or whether he was down.
Gee, what could have happened to him, Brother Matthias? At first, there ain't a batter in the league can touch him. And now he's lost 4 games in a row. Do you think he's through?
I don't know, son. Now let's go in. It's time for dinner.
I think I'll skip dinner, Brother Matthias. I don't seem to have any appetite.
I think I'll skip dinner, Sid. I don't seem to have any appetite.
Look, Babe, I'm just a sports writer, but I do know one thing for sure. You've got to eat if you're going to win games.
Nah, I was always good with a knife and fork, and today they knocked me out again. Gee, Sid, if I only knew what was wrong.
Bet I can tell you.
Hey, Sid, your voice is changing.
That dame in the next booth.
Huh?
I wasn't eavesdropping, but I couldn't help hearing.
Are you talking to me, sister?
Certainly. I paid good money to see you pitch today. And you let the Yankees knock you out in the 3rd inning.
Them lucky bums, horseshoes in every pocket.
Well, just the same, they beat you. And I know why. But if you'd rather, I'd go back to my table.
No, wait a minute. Please.
Well, what does he say?
Please.
Please, lady, peek into your crystal ball with them big blue eyes and tell me why them hitters have been walloping my stuff lately.
Very simple. You tip them off. You telegraph every curve ball you pitch.
Sid, listen to this canary. Listen, me telegraphing what I'm going to pitch. Okay, I'll show you, sister. Hey, Sid, you got a ball or something I can...
How about this bun?
Huh? Yeah, a bun. That'll do fine. Now, watch. I take my grip, I go into my windup like this, and when...
Hold it! Hold it there! Don't move! You see? Every time you start to throw a curve, you stick your tongue out.
Huh?
By gosh, babe, you do. She's got something.
Huh. No wonder I've been getting knocked out so much. Oh, gee, sister, you don't know what this means to me. I could kiss you, honey.
You always kiss your baseball coach?
Well, if he looked like you, sure. No fooling, Sid. I like this skirt. She's an angel. Imagine spotting a thing like that. Gee, I gotta tell the boss. He might give me a chance against them Tigers tomorrow. Look, sister, I want you to come to the game and... Hey, Sid, she's gone.
Brother Matthias, he did it! He beat the Tigers! He beat Ty Cobb and all of them!
Sure, the Red Sox will win the pennant. They got Babe Ruth in their pitching, haven't they? Did he win 2 World Series games and pitch 29 innings without letting them score? I say that makes the Babe greater than even Christy Mathewson.
Well, Babe, another training season, huh?
That's right, Sid. But, gee, I wish we could train up near New York. Then I wouldn't be so far away from Clara.
Claire?
Yeah, what's the difference? You know who I mean. It's funny the way things turn out, huh? Remember that night we met her, Sid, up in Boston, that time she told me to keep my tongue in my face? And then finding her again in New York in that show, and now we're practically engaged. I write her a letter almost every day.
Does she ever answer?
What's that got to do with it? Say, Sid, I ain't written yet today. If you've got a few minutes...
Sure. Go ahead and dictate.
Oh, swell. Well, here goes. dear sister.
Darling Claire.
Who? Oh, yeah. Darling Clara. Well, I got some news for you. Today, I ain't throwing him in there as a pitcher no more. The boss wants to build up the team batting average, and he wants me to take a cut at that old apple every day. So now I am a fly chaser out in the pasture. I miss you more than ever, honey, because now I got more time to think about missing you. I'm playing in the outfield, and nothing much happens out there, which is why I got more time to think about how I'm missing you.
Babe, you're in a rut.
Must be the climate. Read me what I wrote, Sid.
Darling Claire, there's a longing for you in my lonely heart, as your vision of loveliness haunts me night and day. Although you're miles away, I'm happy in the thought that the sea has its pearls, the heaven its stars, and I have you. I shall count the lonely hours until we meet again. Everlastingly, your Babe.
Gee, I said that pretty good, didn't I?
Yeah, you're getting better all the time.
See, Brother Matthias, 29 home runs. That's a big league record.
Yes. The pitchers are saying it's the lively new ball.
Boy, wait till next season comes around. He'll bat the Red Sox right into the pennant.
Oh, I don't think that'll be possible, son.
You don't? Why not?
The Red Sox just sold him to the New York Yankees.
Root, I've asked the reporters to come here today because I want to say something when you sign with us.
Colonel Rupert, you just keep making beer like this and you can say anything you want to.
First, I want you to meet Miller Huggins. He's the manager of our New York Yankees.
This little runt here? Hiya, Squirt. What are you doing down there?
I like it down here.
I like this little guy.
Please, gentlemen. Now then, Root, you hit 29 homers for Boston last season. I don't suppose you or anybody else will ever do that again. But there's one thing you must know, and this goes for you too, Miller Huggins. I'm tired of losing. I must have a winner.
Get me more players like Ruth and you'll get your pennant.
Well, thanks, Muggins.
The name is Huggins.
I tell you, I like this guy. Don't worry, Colonel. I'll get you enough pennants to make a quilt.
You should. You're getting more salary than President Coolidge.
Why not? Did Coolidge ever hit any home runs?
I tell you, I love this little squirt.
How many home runs are you going to hit next year, Babe?
Oh, heck, I'll probably smack out 50 homers.
Yes, gentlemen, and you may quote me. We'll have the greatest year in the history of baseball.
Extra! Read about the baseball scandal! Extra! Last word!
what's the use, Brother Matthias? Oh, what's the use?
I know just how you feel, son. It's hit me pretty hard, too.
First Santa Claus. Now baseball. Gee, there ain't nothing left to believe in.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as that. You see, I happen to believe in both. And let me tell you something else. I know this scandal will hurt the game. I know lots of people won't go near a ballpark anymore. But then lots of others will be out there every chance they get.
Why?
Because there's one player who's never let us down. He never has, and he never will. A friend of mine. Name of George Herman Ruth.
The Babe Ruth Story, starring William Bendix and Charles Bickford with Loreen Tuttle.
I had told that youngster that Babe would never let us down, and he never did. He promised the Yankees 50 home runs, and he kept that promise with a little despair.
Gee, Brother Matthias, 59 home runs! Won't nobody ever come near that record.
Yes, people who'd sworn they'd never see another game came back just to see him hit a home run. They came again and again, and their faith was restored. Next season, the Babe's big booming bat drove the Yankees into the first pennant that ever won, and into the first home they'd ever had, the Yankee Stadium, the greatest ballpark in the land. The finest field, the finest stands, the finest everything.
You know something, Hug? These are the best hot dogs in the league.
Yeah. Pretty big crowd out there today, Babe. Biggest that ever attended a ball game.
No fool. Say, did you know it's just 17 steps from the dugout to this hot dog stand? That's pretty swell, huh?
If a magician ever saws you in half, he'll find himself a fortune in hot dogs.
Oh, you're jealous, Hug. If you had an olive, you'd look like a worm that swallowed a football.
Listen, this season I'm out to win the pennant and the World Series. I want this ball club in condition, and that means you.
Oh, sure, Hug, you betcha. Hey, pal, fix me up another dog, will you?
Listen, Babe, do you know what they're calling this stadium? They're calling it the house that Ruth built. That's quite a compliment.
Yeah, well, it's mighty nice. Hey, that is a big crowd, isn't it?
Yep. 70,000 of them, Babe. I want to tell you something. They respect you and love you. This stadium is their tribute to you, to what you've done for the game. You owe them something, Babe. Don't ever forget that.
Those must have been difficult years for Huggins. A small man, intense, with a fierce desire to win. A small man trying to make a big man, a big kid, really, toe the line. The friction grew until 2 years later, that afternoon in Chicago, in Comiskey Park.
Hey, Babe, will you ring it?
Yeah, okay. Okay, slow down, kids. Take it easy.
Hey, Babe, will you autograph this ball for me? And my dog.
Well, sure, kid. Hey, what's the pooch's name?
Pee-wee.
Pee-wee. Hey, Huggy, that's Pee-wee. That ought to be your name.
All right, wise guy. Get in there and get your bat in practice.
I was just on my way. Stick around, kids. I'll show you how to pace that old app.
Pee-wee, you gotta be quiet now. The babe's gonna bat. Pee-wee! Pee-wee, come back! Don't go out there, you... Pee-wee! Pee-wee!
Oh, gee, kid. I didn't mean it. The pooch ran out of the field and...
Gee, babe, he can't get up. He won't die, will he? He won't die.
No. No, we won't let him die. Come on, kid. We'll get him to a hospital. What's the matter with you anyway? Ain't this a hospital? Ain't you a doctor?
Yes, I'm an intern here.
Well, then what do you mean you won't operate just because he's a dog? You're so narrow-minded your ears overlap.
Someone send for me? What's the trouble here?
Oh, Dr. Belton, I've tried to explain to Mr. Ruth that this is not a veterinarian hospital.
Veterinarian, vegetarian, who cares what religion his joint is? Just save the dog.
Look, Babe. He isn't even moving now.
Oh, well,
you can't let him die. You said you wouldn't.
No, I will. You see, Doc, I promised. You gotta back me up.
Dr. Belton, shall I remove the dog?
Certainly not. Get him ready for surgery.
Hey, kid. You hear that? We're in.
You and me'll wait right here, and the docs will fix him up as good as new, won't you, Doc? Huh?
I just hope I can remember my canine anatomy.
Oh, gee, fellas, I clean forgot what time it was, and how did you do today?
We lost. How did you do?
I won't know until I see Hug. How does he feel?
Since when are you worried about my health?
Oh, hello, Hug.
Where were you during today's game?
Yeah. You know, Hug, the doggone thing happened.
Well, that's nothing compared to what's going to happen. Get out of that uniform and stay out.
Now, listen, short and ugly. I'm getting tired of you picking on
me.
Tired,
huh? Well, I'm fining you $5,000. Now be good and tired.
$5,000?
You've broken every rule in the book and laughed it off. Now pack up and get out of here. Go back to New York and stay there until I say you can play again. Try and laugh that off, Mr. Big.
I've often thought since then, a lesser man might have brooded on his grievances, might have built an undying grudge in his heart, but not the Babe. He was like a child who'd been spanked and wanted only to get back in his parents' graces again. Once the suspension was lifted, he played his heart out for the Bantam manager. 1923-24, battling against illness in 1925, bouncing back again in 26, and then in 1927...
The last game of the season, and he breaks his own record! Oh, boy, 60 home runs!
That wasn't all. There was still the World Series. The Yankees taking four straight games, clinching the title with the Babe's two home runs. And then in 1932, that other series. The one that the fans will never forget. Miller Huggins gone now, but the Babe is still in there, still taking his mighty cut at the ball. The count is two strikes. The pitcher delivers. The Babe connects, and suddenly the crowd goes mad.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just witnessed the most dramatic gesture ever seen on a baseball diamond. You can hear the crowd, of course, but let me tell you exactly what happened. With two strikes on him, two strikes, mind you, Babe Ruth pointed to the center field bleachers, as if to say that was where he put the next pitch. Well, the pitch came over, and that's just what he did. He parked that ball in the center field bleachers, exactly where he said he would. And that crowd that's roaring, that's a Chicago crowd, ladies and gentlemen, yelling and screaming and almost tearing the stands apart. And why shouldn't they? They've just seen something they'll never forget, the greatest home run in the history of baseball.
That was the Babe. He never quit. Not even later when he was broken and sick, when the count was two against him in his fight for life. I think I shall always remember that morning, the big fellow lying there on his hospital bed, still smiling, still game.
Gee, it's like old home week, Brother Matthias, having Claire and you here. That's why I married her, so that I don't have a visitor when I couldn't get out.
Wheel it in here, please.
Hey, what's the idea of the rubber-tired hack, Doc? You're going to take me for another ride?
Yes, Babe, if you say so.
Babe, this is Dr. Belden. He's from Chicago. We've called him in...
Belden? Doc, ain't I met you somewhere before?
Yes, a long time ago.
You coming in as a pinch hitter?
Well, in a sense.
Then this means something serious?
Well, it all depends. If we have any luck...
Hold it, Doc. Stop throwing curves. Give it to me straight. I'm in tough shape, huh?
Babe, I wouldn't let them tell you before. I couldn't. But now you've got to know.
You mean it might be a one-way ride?
George, tonight they wish to give you a serum that has never been used before on human beings. Whether you take it or not is a decision which only you can make. Because it may mean your life.
Never been used before, huh? But if I take it, that might help somebody. People, kids.
Yes, George. If it helps you, then the doctors will know it's safe to use on other human beings.
It's a swell world, Claire. With a lot of swell people in it. I'd kind of like to stick around a while.
You will, Babe. I know you will. Keep swinging. They can't strike you out.
She's right, George. You'll make it. But I'll dust off home plate just in case you have to slide for it.
You see what I mean, Claire?
Swell people. How can a guy lose with a team like that pulling for him? Okay, Doc. This has got to be my 61st homer.
He had a lot of fancy nicknames in his life. To the headline writers, he was the Sultan of SWAT. To the fans, he was Mr. Baseball himself. But to the ones who loved him best, the kids of America, he was always, in simple affection, the Babe. His memory is eternal with them. Babe Ruth will never be forgotten. Not as long as there still remains a ball, a bat, and a boy.
And now a final inning with our guests, Bill Bendix and Charles Bickford. Gentlemen, you really batted 1,000 tonight.
Well, of course, the proceeds from this show support one of the finest things in Hollywood, the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house and hospital. So I know I'm speaking for all actors when I say it's a privilege to appear with the Screen Guild Players.
It's very nice, Charlie, but folks, what Mr. Bickford hasn't mentioned is that he's been one of the hardest workers in behalf of the Motion Picture Relief Fund.
Thank you. And since you're so generous, why not save some of that applause for Camel Cigarettes? Yes, month after month, year after year, they're keeping on with their good work of sending free smokes to the men and servicemen's hospitals. This week, among other hospitals, free Camels are being sent to U.S. Army Station Hospital, Fort Riley, Kansas, U.S. Naval Hospital, Key West, Florida, Veterans Hospital, Springfield, Missouri. This makes a total of more than 180 million cigarettes that the Camel people have sent to servicemen and veterans. Happy smoking, fellas. Your free cigarettes are on the way now.
The Screen Guild Players are directed by Bill Lawrence. The adaptations are by Harry Cronman. Remember, Thursday night is Screen Guild night. And next week, a story crowded with excitement and terror. A violent tale of a man who walked into the face of certain death. The Kiss of Death. Starring Victor Mature, Richard Ridmark, Colleen Gray, and Leon Ames. Be sure to listen. The Babe Ruth story was presented through the courtesy of Allied Artists, producers of The Dude Goes West. William Bendix appeared through the courtesy of his own radio program, The Life of Riley, heard every Friday over this network. Charles Bickford is currently starring in Sam Goldwyn's Rosianna McCoy. For fun and hilarity, don't miss Camel Cigarettes' other great show over these same stations. Tomorrow night, The Jimmy Durante Show with Alan Young. And remember, Thursday night is Screen Guild night. The greatest stars and the greatest stories brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. This is Vern Smith speaking for Camel.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that, and I thought the portrayal of Babe Ruth by William Bendix was really great. Right now, I'd like you to stay tuned for a little scary stuff. Going to take you back a few years to listen to an episode of Lights Out, next up on Theater of the Mind. You're listening to Theater of the Mind on Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto. Well, it's time now for a few chills. Yes, it's time for Lights Out. Well, tonight we hear about a spaceship heading back to Earth from the moon in the future year of 2000. With a scientist on board who shares a disturbing theory about their trip. So get ready, my friends, to put the lights out.
Lights out, everybody. Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly, but sincerely, to turn off your radio now.
Prophecy is an easy thing, for rarely is the prophet brought to judgment. Tonight I bring you a false prophecy, a play set at this hour, yes, 1 minute after 10 Eastern peacetime, but the years have moved onward to the number of 55. The place of our story is a great rocket speeding away from the moon. Yes, away. For the first trip to the moon has finally taken place, and a triumphant airship is now rapidly returning to the Mother Earth. Here, then, is a story about a tomorrow 55 years hence, September 20th in the year of our Lord, 2000, on board a rocket ship. A play that is, I sincerely hope, a very false prophecy.
The sky is sure the limit, our new century's begun. We're floating on our plastic boats, we're flying through the air. The world is all our playground, we haven't got a care. Oh, I'm glad to be alive, boys, I'm glad to be alive. I'm riding on a rocket train, and soon I will arrive. Oh, I'm glad to be alive, boys, I'm glad to be alive. I'm riding on a rocket train, and soon I will arrive.
Hey, Doc, how about joining us?
Yes, Doctor. Don't you think it's about time we had a little celebration?
There's a great deal of work to be done.
Work's over, Doctor. 24 hours more and we're back.
Yes, Doctor. We'll be back. We've done it. Complete.
In 24 hours.
If you're worried about our landing, I'm not. You worrying, Reynolds?
No, sir. Everything's in perfect order.
Sure, Doc. There's going to be a round trip. Anyway, there's 24 hours before we have to worry about that.
Yes, Doctor. It's a time for celebration. Oh, I'm glad to be alive, boys. I'm glad to be alive.
I'm riding on a rocket train, and soon I will arrive.
Reynolds.
Oh,
Mr. Reynolds. Are you men out of your minds? You, Major Russell. Reynolds is still a boy, but you're a mature man. Please act mature, huh?
Oh, but doctor,
I'll grant you that our adventure has gone well.
Well is right. We've been to the moon.
My congratulations, Reynolds.
Thank you, Major, thank you. I'll put the medal on my other chest.
Will you men listen to me? We're 48,000 miles from the Earth.
And headed right for it.
We're not there yet.
Doc, pardon the expression, but you're a gloomy Joe.
I am a realist.
But doctor, the possibilities of anything going wrong are remote. Surely we're entitled to relax a little and relish the fact of what we've done.
Yeah, we've done it, Doc. Even if we never get back, we've done it. We've been to the moon, and it'll always be there on the books.
I'm not interested in becoming an historical fact, Major Russell. The data we've collected, that's my only interest. May I ask you and Reynolds to get back to your post?
Oh, but everything's going like clockwork. Look at the gauges.
But we are out of radio contact with the Earth.
Yes, sir. But we are on course. Doc, what is wrong?
Wrong? What should be wrong?
No, the kid's right, Doc. Ever since we made the circle and started back all these days, you've been acting as if we didn't make it. We've gone 243,000 miles, and we're three-quarters of the way back, and we're in, Doc. We're in. So what's the matter with you?
How old were you, Major, when the Second World War ended?
Oh, about five. What's that got to do?
And you, Reynolds, you weren't even born.
No, sir.
I was 21 on that day in New Mexico when they set off the first chain reaction. 21.
Doc, you mean to say you were in at the beginning of it?
Of course he was. Dr. Chamberlain was one of the original research men in the atomic bomb project back in 45. The only one of them alive today.
Well, what do you know? So that's why you wanted to make this trip, Doc. I mean, you...
Yes, Major. You wanted it as a substitution for what you missed as a boy. The excitement and glory of war.
Oh, now, Doc.
It's true, and Reynolds here is young and idealistic. And the scientific wonder of it was what he wanted. And I? I was there at the birth of an era. Now atomic power is driving me into space, back to the Earth where it all began. And I'm thinking...
Yeah, Doc?
It's not pertinent to any of this. We have no time to discuss our emotions. There's work to be done. Airspeed 23486.
Interior temperature 68.2.
Interior temperature 68.2.
Well, that's it.
Yes.
Any radio contact, Reynolds?
No, sir.
How about that, Doc?
Unfortunate, but not very vital. We're definitely on course.
How much longer will it be, Doc?
10 hours. At the most, 10 hours.
In the middle of LaGuardia Field. That's where I'd like to land.
I hope not.
Texas. Isn't that it?
Sure, sure. We'll hit the flats right on the nose.
If the auxiliary jets work.
They worked on the moon. They'll work on landing. We're the good luck boys, Doc. We can't miss.
You have the optimism of a 16-year-old. Reynolds, you'd better get back to your radio. Try phone contact.
Yes, sir.
Major, check the jet temperatures.
Right jet, 1580.
Right jet, 1580.
Left jet, 1583.
Left jet, 1583.
Speed... 24832.
Speed 24832.
XR1 calling CQ. XR1 calling CQ. Hello, hello, hello. XR1 calling CQ. XR1 calling CQ. Hello, hello, hello.
Any luck?
No, sir.
Put your transmitter back on automatic.
Yes, sir.
Why do you laugh, Major?
I was just thinking about how many millions of telescopes are turned in our direction.
Yes?
What you said a few hours ago. I mean, about my wanting the excitement and adventure. That's true, you know. I'm 60 years old, and I guess I just lived for this chance. The Army hadn't okayed my going. Well, here I am. Once we land, I'll admit frankly I'm going to cash in on every bit of it and have myself a time. You know something? I get the feeling kind of depressed when I think it'll soon be over. Well, there's no reason for depression, is there?
I couldn't answer that.
Why not?
You've been wondering, undoubtedly, why ever since we left the moon, I've been acting strangely.
That's right.
I've never believed in predestination, and yet there's been sort of a motivation of fate in my life. At 21, I was part of that research team trying to adapt atomic power to military purposes. When that first bomb went off over the New Mexico desert, a newspaper man repeated the words, "What hath God wrought?" And no one quite knew. I've been waiting 55 years for the answer. I think I found it a few hours ago on the moon. And it's an answer full of horror. Oxygen valve. That's why you're yawning.
Oh, yes, sir. 2 points?
2 points.
Well, the Major's sure sleeping.
Yes.
It's only a few more hours, isn't it?
Yes.
Will we have to put on our compression suits the way we did on the takeoff?
Yes, of course.
Doctor, may I ask you something?
Yes?
Before... You spoke of finding an answer on the moon. And then you didn't say any more. Well, I've been thinking about it. I was wondering if it was something that the Major couldn't understand. And that's why you didn't speak of it further.
And now you want to know.
Yes, sir. I haven't lived anywhere as long as you two have, but my life has been built around atomic power. My dad. He was one of your men. My
Ever since I was a child, becoming a physicist like Dad was and you are and Dr. Oppenheimer and all the rest, why, that was it. Now, all of a sudden, the way you spoke before, as if all our research has been criminal. Do you mean that?
Collision radar.
Get at it.
What's the matter? What's the matter?
Object approaching.
Where?
15 degrees west. There it is. Meteorite. It's a meteorite. It's all of
That was the closest.
Oh, it was indeed.
Be sardonic indeed to collide with a meteorite at this point in our journey.
I use a stronger word than sardonic, Doctor.
Yeah, like faking.
It's all clear.
Well, I better get back to
No, Reynolds. Reynolds, you asked me a question before, and I want to answer it. You too, Major Russell. I want you to hear this.
Sure.
Reynolds overheard what I said to you. That I'd found the answer to a very old question on the moon. He said that he felt that somehow I thought all of the research on atomic power had been criminal. No, young man, I don't believe that. Not at all. Criminal to know more about a way of nature? No. The answer I found was something else. I hadn't even an answer, perhaps only a theory. When we came within 100 miles of the moon and then began to de-accelerate, to turn back, what did we see through the observation ports?
Well, Doctor,
sir, no, please, let me tell you what I saw. The craters of the moon. Great, gigantic craters, and as we came closer and closer, the look of them was so familiar. Not because I had seen them through telescopes and in photographs, but for some reason that I couldn't quite understand. Craters of the moon, and suddenly, at the very moment when we'd come as close as we dared and our ship swung in an orbit to return, suddenly I knew. It was a memory of another crater I had seen 55 years before in New Mexico from an observation plane high over the ground a few hours after the first atomic bomb had lit the sky with a new sun. Yes. The crater in the crust of the earth that bomb had left was the same as the craters of the moon. Do you understand? The crater our bomb had left on the earth was the same as the craters on the moon.
So what? I don't get it.
Yes, Doctor. What are you getting at? The crater in that desert was a thousandth of the size of the ones you're talking about.
I suddenly began to think. Was it not possible that the moon had gone through the same evolutionary processes as our Earth before our Earth? Yes. Wasn't it possible that men had come into being on the moon, developed their own civilization, had known scientific progress, even as we have, but long before we Earthmen had known it?
Say, Doc.
You do understand. These men of the moon had discovered the secret of atomic power long before we did, and then had used it to blast and to tear each other. Yes. And the craters on the moon, that terrible devastation, was the record of the destruction of their civilization. A final war, which had burned up the very atmosphere and left the moon a dead planet circling endlessly through an airless sky.
All right, Doctor. Presuming your theory is correct, that the moon men had started through a war, a chain atomic reaction that they couldn't stop, well, what of it? It indicates that they were fools.
Yeah, that's it. Fools.
Are we any wiser? You'd better cut it down.
Right, how much?
About 15%.
Right.
You get anything, Reynolds?
No, sir.
Would you come here a moment?
Yes, sir.
Will you help me with this port covering?
Yes, sir.
Here, there.
All right.
Oh, trying to take a look, huh?
Yes, that's it.
There she is.
Mama Earth.
Reynolds, the cameras?
Yes, sir. How much should I run, Doctor?
Put it on automatic exposure.
Yes, sir.
6 more hours, eh, Doctor?
Or less.
Sure we haven't made a mistake and headed for Venus.
What are you...
That was just a bad joke, Doc. Now, there's no two ways about it. The outline of the continents, we can't make any mistake about that being our home address. I wonder how much they can see of us. Where are we, 6,000-7,000 miles out? You know, this reminds me of the time about 25 years ago. The Army sent me up to 1,000 miles to take observation photographs. Well, you remember how the atomic reaction motors were then. We got up about 500 feet and...
Major.
What? What?
Look down. Look.
What? Well, I don't see anything.
Look, I tell you. Reynolds, come here.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
Well, the doctor says... There's
Reynolds,
something.
Look. You see?
Yes. What is it?
I see it, too. Bright lights going on and off. What's going on down there?
Doctor, are they signaling us? Are they signaling?
It's 6,000 miles. Why? Why should they?
That's right. There's no such plan.
Look at it. It is lights going on and off.
But they're all from one area.
Can you make out where?
North America.
Then they are signals. The candle in the window.
Your own question. At 6,000 miles?
Wait a minute.
Are they explosions?
Explosions? Major Doctor, is that it? Are they explosions?
I don't know.
CQ, CQ, hello, 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 CQ, CQ. Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor, I can't raise anyone.
Doc, come here.
Yes, but...
Look, the closer we get, they are explosions.
3 more hours, we'll know.
I want to know now. Reynolds, what's the matter with you? Why can't you make radio contact?
I'm doing everything I can.
Major.
Doc, what is it?
Craters. Look, craters.
Craters? At this altitude, you couldn't possibly...
After each flash, I do see them.
Okay, what does it mean? Well, what are you looking at me like that for? What does it mean?
Dr. Major, something's coming through.
Oh, well, about time.
I can only hear it faintly.
What? What?
Please, let me listen. United States.
What? Reynolds, what is it?
Tell us. Boy, I couldn't quite make up. They said...
Said what?
Tell us. 4. He said 4. Blasting the United States off the face of the earth. Blasting. It's a joke, isn't it? Isn't it?
What are they sending now? What now?
It began an hour ago. No warning. Projectiles, radio controlled. Point of origin unknown. Oh, it stopped again, the transmission.
That's enough. Where's the International Police Force? What's being done about it? Doctor! Doctor, did you hear it was an attack without warning? Who could it be? What's the idea?
The explosions are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, is there anything more coming through?
No, nothing. Yes. Yes, they started transmission again.
All right, let's have it quick.
Some station in Midwest. I can't get the call letters.
Who cares?
He says it's hell. Ground shaking. No bombs landed near. Air reconnaissance. It's so garbled I can hardly make out.
Well?
It started an hour ago. Everything burning. Now it's stopped again. There's nothing.
Doctor? Doctor, in heaven's name, what do you think it's all about? Stop staring out of the window and talk to me.
What are they doing?
What do you mean, what are they doing? They're bombing us, blasting us. It's war, but who? We've got to find out. Reynolds, find out who.
It's no use. There's no transmission.
Doctor, those bombs, where are they coming from? Can't you tell by the trajectory?
At this distance? And what difference does the face of the enemy make? It's happening, that's all.
Smashed them. I always said we should have smashed them. Exterminated them 50 years ago.
Oh, they were so peaceful for so many years.
The flashes are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, get on that radio.
I'll try again.
I've got to know who. The devils. We had agreements with everyone. The international devils. All of them. Call them devils. I don't even know who they are. Reynolds! You get anything?
No, I don't.
Doctor, faster. Let's get down there faster. Let's open it up.
You know better than that. We're entering atmosphere. Increased speed, and we'd burn up like a meteorite.
But I'm an army man. All my life I've been trained.
Through.
What?
The bombs? Nothing? I can hardly make it out.
Keep at it.
Panic? Paratroopers?
Who? Who?
Last message from United States of... It's ended. There is no more.
We'd only get down there faster.
Only 500 more miles.
Look at it down there. Our Air Force, protective measures, what happened to them?
What happened?
Doctor, you, why don't you say something? You just sit there for hours watching. This isn't a scientific experiment going on down there. They're blasting us to pieces. Us. Your atomic bomb, the great secret. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. You said that. Yes, you. I was a kid then. I heard you say it over the radio when they gave you a medal. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. But what do you got to say now?
We had a wonderful 55 years.
What?
Everybody had a wonderful time.
Reynolds, what's the matter with him? He's gone.
No. Let him finish.
First, we hung the criminals 55 years ago. And as soon as their body stopped swinging, we left the crowd and each went back to his own house and shut the door.
You said the peace would hold forever.
I said it because I thought that when the secret was put away, the people of the world would remember the terror. I said to myself, now, surely now that they've seen the possibility of the disintegration of their Earth, they'll be drawn together once again into the family of men as it must have been in the beginning. I forgot what years could do. I forgot how quickly forgetfulness comes. I forgot that in only a few years, Hiroshima and Nagasaki would be only yesterday's sensations for a nation eager for sensations for today. You keep asking me who's sending those bombs against us, who? I tell you, we're sending them against ourselves. Yes, because had we made our way of life something more than a confused dream of shiny machines and happy endings, those bombs of hatred and revenge would not be flying at us. I said the peace would hold forever because I thought that out of that war at last men had learned that there was no defense against hatred and revenge, but the defense of education for the unity of people. It was a race, gentlemen, against time. And we wasted our last 55 years running backwards on a track of chromium and plastics. And so we've lost forever.
No. We've never lost.
Look, the blasts are increasing in frequency. There's nothing left. Nothing.
We'll start someplace else. We'll build...
Doctor, look. The color of the blast.
Oh, dear God.
What? What?
Doctor, it's nitrogen, isn't it?
Nitrogen? What?
The fools. The everlasting fools, I warn.
The blast. More and more.
They started something they couldn't end. The color of the blast. They've set off hydrogen atoms.
I don't know what you...
We used uranium, plutonium, and when the initial blast was over, that was all. But hydrogen, that's part of life. One reaction sets off the other like setting off an endless chain until... Look down there.
Blast. Faster and faster.
They're spreading. The fools. God help the fools. God help the fools.
The world.
It happened.
The sheet of flame. Around the earth. Doctor, tell me, what is it? What was it? Tell me. It burned up all the atmosphere.
Burned up? Reynolds, what does he mean?
The chain reaction burned up all the air.
Move on.
Major, Major, the left jet.
It's all right. It's all right. All right. Where are we going? Can we go down there?
There is no air, no life. The moon, the earth, the same.
How much fuel?
There's the gauge.
2-3 hours?
Yes. Yes, I think that's right. Isn't it, Major?
Yeah.
What do we do?
You ask that question now? The Major no longer asks it. Do you know the answer, Major?
Sure. We'll circle around. Then we'll crash.
No, 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 no. No, it'll be all right, my boy. My words again. Have peace. Forever.
Thank you for listening. Tomorrow night, it's The Saint, followed by Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Thanks to Joel Schoenwell for technical support. The executive producer of Theater of the Mind is Moses Neimer. I'm Frank Proctor. Have a great evening.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.